I'm Debbie Ransom, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Jamaica's Prime Minister, Bruce Golding, was this afternoon being cross-examined by an opposition party lawyer in the public inquiry about his government's handling of the extradition of a reputed drug lord. Mr. Golding had offered to resign from his post during the fallout over the hiring of a US law firm to lobby Washington on behalf of strongman Christopher Dudas Koch, who is now in US custody. The opposition People's National Party lawyer, K.D. Knight, asked Mr. Golding whether he regretted sending a government minister, Dr. Ronald Robinson, to meet with US lawyers Manat Phelps and Phillips over what Mr. Golding contends was a party matter.
With hindsight, don't you think that notwithstanding his party position, it was an ill-advised decision to send him, having regard to his other government position in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Foreign Trade?
No.
You would do it all over again?
I saw no conflict.
Do you now see any?
No.
You would do it all over again?
No, I wouldn't do it all over again.
Were the circumstances to be the same, knowing what you now know, would you send Dr. Robinson with Mr. Brady to Manat Phelps and Phillips?
The answer is no, Mr. Chairman, but the council knows that I've already said, both publicly and in testimony, that I regret that the party became involved in this matter, and therefore, in terms of anything that could happen again, that issue would not arise, and I would not be challenged with that sort of decision.
Bruce Golding on the stand this afternoon. 2 years ago, regional insurance giant Clico had been on the brink of failure. A bailout by the Trinidad government saved it, but left investors waiting for their money back. Well, Clico in Trinidad and Tobago has now started paying money back to smaller investors. If you had an investment of $75,000 or less, you could start collecting your money without interest. 1,000 members of this group have received their money, with another 9,000 investors to go. Larger investors, however, that's those with over $75,000 invested, will have a 20-year period over which to collect their money. As BBC Caribbean's Tony Fraser explained, the group of smaller investors are pleased with the development.
It's good for this group from the point of view that they are going to take back their money that is invested in Clico. And obviously, anybody with $75,000 and under, they are obviously very desperate for their money because they are the smaller investors. They are happy to get back their money. And the government recognized that this group is very important because it is important for the financial system. If you have this large group of people who have monies outstanding to them from the financial system, that cannot be a good thing. And therefore, the government wants to bring some sense of stability and confidence to the investment community.
So this must also be quite a big boost for Clico following its near demise.
Absolutely, because Clico's name is not the brightest name now in the investment community. People are staying away from investing in the company.
But while thousands of Clico customers are celebrating, there must be quite a few who are not happy today.
Absolutely. Those persons who are in the big investment category, and at one time there were groups of them who were encouraging the small investors not to take their money. But those larger investors, they are locked into a protracted period because in the first instance, the government is saying to them that you can collect your money but over a 20-year period. And there is no early end in sight for them. So they can't be happy.
Tony Fraser in Port of Spain. Caribbean energy ministers at a regional meeting were today considering a recommendation to remove a regional tax on imported fuel and food. It's a bid to ease the strain on regional consumers. Many Caribbean countries have hiked fuel prices in March alone because of the soaring price of oil on the world market. Food prices have also gone up this month. More from Bertram Niles.
The impact of the soaring fuel and food prices has forced CARICOM energy ministers to meet for the first time in 20 years. At their session in Guyana on Thursday, the ministers were discussing a key recommendation that the common external tariff on food and fuels being produced outside the region be removed for now. That proposal came from the chairman of the Council for Trade and Economic Development, Antigua and Barbuda's Joanne Massey. She also called on CARICOM to examine other steps to combat rising food and fuel prices.
including but not limited to consideration for the immediate removal of the CET on the list of items. B, the urgent convening of a joint quartet of agriculture and trade ministers to discuss the evolving global challenges on CARICOM.
The Antigua and Barbuda minister also recommended that CARICOM engages the international community, mainly the European Union, to get some help in mitigating the impact of these price rises.
Bertram Niles reporting. It was supposed to ease the price of travelling to the Caribbean, but Britain's decision to freeze a controversial air departure tax could result in Caribbean tourism being hit with a painful double whammy next year. That's the assessment of the deputy chair of the committee set up to lobby against the air passenger duty, the APD, Gilmore Smith. Mr. Smith told BBC Caribbean that instead of one air tax next year, there'll be two. That's because the European Union is also planning to implement a tax on air travel. So that, on top of next April's planned increase in Britain's APD, could make travel to the Caribbean much more expensive and lead to a decline in travel to the region.
Just freezing it is just putting it on hold for the implementation of the European Trading Scheme, which is a tax for airlines to offset the emissions that they can buy up.
So what you're actually saying is that passengers travelling to and from the UK to the Caribbean will actually end up paying more?
They will actually be paying more next year because they have only frozen the APD tax at £75. We do not know what it will come in as yet, but you can be assured that it would be an increase in the taxes that the diaspora will have to pay going towards the Caribbean next year.
And what about in the Caribbean? What can the Caribbean do?
Write to their families and get them to get them involved. The more that we can put pressure on the diaspora involved in this process, the better it would be for us, because we are very lazy at coming out. We are very lazy at petitioning. We are very lazy in getting involved.
Now, given the situation that the APD is in now for the Caribbean, some could say that your committee has failed.
Well, we haven't failed. We have got them to look at it again. We put pressure on them, and this is the reason why the Chancellor in his speech yesterday said he will look at the Caribbean in light of the position and the pressure that we have put on him. So we have not failed.
But more work to do.
We have more work to do, yes. This consultation period now, everyone should get involved and write to their MPs so that they can go to their chief whips and say, we are getting a lot of pressure put on us from the Caribbean. And we know that the Caribbean people hold the balance of power in the next election, but what we must do is to come out and use that power.
Deputy Chair of the APD Tax Committee, Gilmore Smith. That full interview on our website, bbccaribbean.com. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. A London jury on Thursday convicted one of Britain's most notorious serial rapists who preyed on the elderly for nearly two decades and may have assaulted scores of victims. 53-year-old Jamaican-born Delroy Grant was known as the Night Stalker Rapist. London's Metropolitan Police have described his crimes as some of the most awful, disgusting and disturbing they have ever investigated. The details from Mike Jarvis.
The police have branded Delroy Grant a perverted, callous and violent individual who attacked some of the most vulnerable people in society. Police Commander Simon Foy spoke outside the court today.
Part of Delroy Grant's method was to prey upon the elderly and take advantage of their frailty and the fact that they would often be too terrified to contact police or even talk about what had happened to them.
Grant, who lived in South London, denied 29 charges committed between 1992 and 2009, including burglary, rape, and sexual assault. He was found guilty of raping an 89-year-old woman after breaking into her home in 1992. He also carried out a brutal sex attack on an 81-year-old woman in 1998. The jury convicted him of claiming at least 18 victims, but it is feared the total may be more than 500. Investigators tracking the Night Stalker used cutting-edge techniques to try to build a picture of the man from his DNA. Scientists found Grant was of Caribbean origin, and further investigation suggested his ancestors probably came from the Windward Islands. After his arrest, police found that Grant was Jamaican. Eight police officers had traveled to the Windward Islands as part of the inquiry. The presiding judge said Grant could be given a life sentence on Friday.
Mike Jarvis and Mike will be back tomorrow morning with our final edition of BBC Caribbean Magazine, which is looking at the future of pan-Caribbean media. Earlier this week, we heard from Trinidad and Tobago Prime Minister Kamla Passad Bisesa on the Caribbean Court of Justice. Well, also in that interview, I asked the Trinidad leader about help for a post-election Haiti, which she said is based on building Haiti's capacity.
More money is to come. I think it is the way forward will be, how do we lend whatever expertise we may have to Haiti to give that kind of capacity for implementation to develop Haiti, to grow Haiti. It remains a tragedy for all of us in the region, the position that Haiti is in. But if there's any assistance to be given, whether from us or from elsewhere, it has to be with respect to capacity building. There's very little of that left in Haiti.
And you and the other CARICOM leaders had spoken about helping to develop more of a manufacturing base in Haiti so that you're not just giving them aid. Mm-hmm. How can a country like Trinidad, a country like Jamaica, really help to propel that?
Well, with due respect, I don't think we can even get there in the short term. That may be a medium-term plan, but in the short term, it is just so bad. When it's described to us, it's just the blocks and the stones and the rubble, just to move that. You have to move that out before you can do anything else. Again, our local manufacturing sector can partner with Haiti. I know they're very interested indeed in going outside of Trinidad and Tobago, and that could come. But in the short term, Debbie, it has to be with just clearing up and cleaning up.
Trinidadian Prime Minister Kamla Passad Bisesa. And now, as in most of our final week of programming, it's time to dip into the archives.
This is Una Boston introducing West Indians in Britain.
It would be impossible for students to write any sort of survey of the literature of the Anglophone Caribbean without the role of the BBC Caribbean Voices.
Well, in view of these limitations of something like the Race Relations Act, to try to educate people more generally, to try and promote this voluntary action of which you speak.
I would not feel happy unless they're able to give me or show me the remains of my son to give him a burial after all those so many years.
Do you wish that Abu Bakr would not have gone that route?
Have you ever thought that I might have been dead by now had I not taken a course of action to defend myself? I told you self-defense is human nature.
Grenada's Prime Minister Keith Mitchell spoke to his people and the world yesterday on the evening edition of BBC Caribbean Report.
We've declared the country as a national disaster, and we're looking at the possibility of a state of emergency.
It's 11 minutes after 6 in Port-au-Prince, after surely what must have been one of the most miserable nights in the history of the capital of Haiti, a country which some would say has had more than its fair share of misery. As you would have heard in the world news, a global aid effort is underway after the devastation caused by the quake which struck on Tuesday evening.
Bonjour, moi c'est Caroline Faustin.
Moi c'est Simone Degaff.
Ou attendez émission Connexion Haïti BBC.
Objectif nous simple, c'est pour bailler information important pour millions haïtiens tremblement de terre là affecté. Information vitale pour dire qui côté pour nous joindre assistance urgence, manger, abri, mais nous voulons attendre de retour.
Reggae legend Gregory Isaacs has died in London at the age of 59. His manager and friends told BBC Caribbean that the music giant had originally suffered from cancer of the liver, which then spread.
As a Haitian, 1 year after the earthquake, we see that the Haitian government is not doing anything. There are a lot of people living in tents, and although they talk about reconstruction, we have not seen anything done.
In reverse order, Haitians talking about their lives 1 year on, the death of Gregory Isaacs, the Haiti quake, and the award-winning Creole Lifeline program which followed it. Also, you heard Keith Mitchell after Hurricane Ivan, and from earlier, Yassine Aboubakar, Alimenta Bishop, Trevor MacDonald, George Lamin before him, and Una Marsden, presenter of the Call in the West Indies program during World War II. There'll be more from our archives in our final program on Friday, and also coming up soon on our legacy website at bbccaribbean.com. But that's it for BBC Caribbean Report, and the last time from me, Debbie Ransom. It's been an honour serving you, our wonderful audience. There'll be more BBC Caribbean news tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock GMT. That's 7 o'clock Eastern Caribbean time. Also, our final evening edition of Caribbean Report will be at 5:15 Eastern Caribbean time. Thanks to my producer, Neil Nunes, and to all the hard-working team here at BBC Caribbean. I'm Debbie Ransom.